Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, I'm Kate. I'm a producer. As we were getting ready to wrap this series, the nature of this project changed suddenly. I won't tell you what happens now because it happens much later on in the series, and I want to be truthful to that. But I hope you'll listen to the end. Okay, let's take the first step.
You know those John and Jane Does that you hear about in the news? Or in some mystery detective thriller? Bodies without names? Those are the people I'm interested in. Figuring out who they are and bringing them home to their families. Even if it's sometimes years or decades later. I've been on this flip side of crime fighting for a long time now. I want to bring peace to the families who've lost someone. Almost since the beginning, one case has been on my mind. It's a long story. It's about a family with the misfortune of not having one missing person in it, but two. Two boys that vanished, their bodies never found. Decades ago, this family's path was blown off course by one man, a serial killer. He set into motion a series of events that would leave relatives in the dark. They didn't know who their people were, whether they'd been abandoned altogether, or whether they'd been spared some terrible fate. That's when I came into the picture. I was a stranger, but very soon, I wouldn't be. And somehow, with my help, these folks had basically given up on getting answers, would find them. Let me start by telling you how I got to where I am today. People often wonder how I got into this line of work. And I tell them, it all started with a ghost story. Well, it is a ghost story, but it's also a love story. It was October of 1987. I was in my senior year of high school. It was Halloween, and everyone was telling spooky stories. I was in Livingston, Tennessee, where I actually still live. It's a beautiful town right on the foothills of the Smoky Mountains. Actually, I should probably introduce myself. My name is Todd Matthews. I'm 53 years old. I'm a husband, a father, and a grandfather. I have a lot of years of investigating under my belt. And I've also worked at the Department of Justice for more than a decade. But back in 1987, I wasn't any of that. I was just sitting around fifth period study hall when this pretty brunette Lori walked in. She was a transfer student who had just moved to town.
He saw me first, and then we got to study hall, and he came up to me, and he said, "Can I sit down?" And I'm like, "Sure." And he sat down literally in the same seat that I was in. Even though there was open seats next to me, he sat in my seat.
She had those pretty dark brown eyes, pretty dark brown hair that basically mirrored mine, almost like we were made to match each other.
And they were telling ghost stories. And they were like, "Does anybody else have a ghost story?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, I have one."
She heard it from her dad, Wilbur Riddle. Two decades ago, the year Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. were assassinated, Wilbur was living near a town called Georgetown, Kentucky, just outside of Lexington. Wilbur drilled holes for wells, and one day he was walking up the side of the road when he saw a tent wrapper. It was gray green, and it looked like there was something in it. He wasn't really sure, and he bumped it with his foot. And Wilbur could tell, by the way it was rolled down the hill, shifting around, that it had something in it. Maybe something bad. And he walks down to the bottom of the hill, and he cuts into the bag. And the smell that comes out is overwhelming. So he calls the sheriff, the coroner, they all show up. Local officials confirm what Wilbur already suspected. There was a young woman wrapped in that canvas tent wrapper. She'd been murdered. Everybody wanted to find her killer. But first, they had to figure out who this woman was. That proved much harder than you'd think. No one recognized her. She was a real mystery. By the time I heard this story, she was a cold case. She'd been dead for 20 damn years. She's what you'd call a Jane Doe, dead body without a known identity. But after Wilbur found her, the newspaper started calling her Tent Girl, named for the canvas tent wrapper she was found in. Imagine your life, your identity, boiled down to the stuff of urban legends, being reduced to the place that your body was found. Something about this story shook something inside of me, changed my life. First, because that girl Lori, the newcomer with the dark brown eyes, I married her not long after that. There's another reason. For the next 10 years, I wouldn't stop thinking about Tent Girl. And that's not an exaggeration.
I had no clue it was going to lead to this. I thought he would just forget it in a couple of months, but no, he never forgot it.
When we go visit Lori's family, we'd stop in Georgetown, Kentucky. I'd stop and see the local newspaper office to see if anything new had been written about the Tent Girl. It wasn't on the web back then, because there wasn't one. Print copies is all we had. And then the internet came along. And I remember hearing it called the Information Superhighway. I thought, that's a road I need to be on. I heard about Tent Girl when I was 17, so you could kind of say I grew up with her. Technology advanced, my wife and I grew into our marriage. We had our first son, Dylan. And night after night, I kept trying to put the pieces back together. At the time, I worked on an assembly line, putting together air conditioning parts. I didn't know a lot about the internet, but in the early 90s, who did? But I built myself a website for Tent Girl, kind of clunky and plain. I put every detail I could find in there. I guess I just hoped someone was missing this woman and they'd find my webpage. It was like going on a backward scavenger hunt. I had the answer to someone's question. What happened to my sister, daughter, friend? I had to find the family member who recognized Tent Girl as their own. But obsessing over a dead woman didn't do me any favors at home.
We did have marriage issues because he didn't want to do anything but work on the Tent Girl. If we went on a vacation, it involved the Tent Girl. It was something to do with her. I no longer felt married, I guess. I felt like he was more married to the Tent Girl story than me. I kind of regretted telling him about it, and I've told him that.
You know, that was kind of hard to hear. So I started helping put my kid to bed, go to bed with Lori, then waking up in the middle of the night to search the net. Back then, it was dial-up internet. You know, you'd have to find a way to get yourself onto the web and hope to God somebody didn't call you and knock you back off of it. Good thing I was working mostly at night. Not a lot of people calling at 3 a.m. And then, in 1998, a miracle happened. I found a message in the bottle. It was an online posting from a woman named Rosemary. She had a sister who had gone missing around the time the Tent Girl had been found.
I said, I have a missing sister. She is 24 years old. She's 5'2", brown hair, brown eyes, medium petite build, was last seen in Lexington, Kentucky. She worked the carnival.
So by then, a lot of people expected me to give up hope. You know, who else is stubborn enough to keep searching on the internet long past the time it makes a lick of sense? But that's what brought me to Rosemary.
And it was just pure luck that he went on that website and found my post that night. It was just pure luck.
After I come across the missing person's posting that Rosemary wrote, I got in touch with her. That's when everything really started falling into place.
I didn't know whether to cry or to just drop down in disbelief. It was more like relief that, oh my God, this is over.
We had to do an exhumation at that point and get more officials involved. But finally, we were able to tell the Tent Girl's family or she'd been.
It's the end of wondering all these years, well, where is she? It's all those thoughts running through your head. And then you think, I know where she is now. And I can let that rest. I don't have to worry about that anymore.
At long last, Tent Girl was given back her name. She was Barbara Ann Hackman Taylor. So after I solved this case, I really didn't know what was next. But I found out real quick. I got a ton of national attention. That was new for me.
The tarp-wrapped body of a nude female now called the Tent Girl.
She was known as Tent Girl until the late 1990s when her true identity was discovered.
A dark obsession.
How this man's dreams helped identify the Tent Girl.
Todd Matthews is with us all the way from Cookeville.
This was just the beginning. Solving the Tent Girl case would lead to figuring out who a lot of John and Jane Does were. Soon I'd find a lot of other part-time sleuths. We could start solving cases, together cruising down the information superhighway we now call the internet. My work would end up laying the foundation for a sea of change in how this country identifies John and Jane Does. Many of these cases were solved with the tools that I helped build, but some remain cold cases. This one case got stuck in my head, almost like it chose me. A serial killer crossed paths with two little boys from the same family. One went missing in 1974, and he was just a baby. The other boy was an elementary school kid with an Aladdin backpack. He disappeared 20 years later in 1994. Both boys were never found. I heard about him in the early 2000s. I wrote to the serial killer myself, asking what happened to the boys, but I didn't get anything useful out of him. That is, until 2019. I got a break in the case that rocked my world. It's a story that started out as work and ended up being one of the most personal cases I ever had. The kind of story that starts from something and then starts unwinding and unwinding, like pulling a never-ending piece of twine. And that is why I have to tell it, because I'm haunted by the alternative. My name is Todd Matthews, and this is Hello John Doe, a sleuth, a family, and a serial killer. The story of a family torn apart by tragedy and my quest to bring them back together. Chapter 1, The Missing Boys. In the late 90s, it was incredible to me that missing people could fall through the cracks the way they would. If you were from Miami and took a quick business trip to Tulsa and told no one, and happened to die in a car accident in between, your body could remain unidentified for years, even if your loving wife is looking for you. Actually, you could go missing and die in one county over and no one would know, because no one was sharing data, or because a killer might take the victim's clothes or ID on purpose so they wouldn't get caught. Without a national database to identify John Doe's lying in morgues, it was near impossible to put a name to a body. Man, if a thing like that did exist, Tent Girl would have been identified a lot sooner. So I decided to just make the damn thing. I volunteered myself and built a national database and filled it with the profiles of people who were nameless and deceased, and others who had gone missing. It wasn't just me. There were lots of us. The idea was, as we like to say, give the nameless back their names and return the missing to their families. We called it the Doe Network. Remember, this was something I did on the side. I had to keep the money coming in. So by day, I was working in a factory here in Tennessee. First on the assembly line, putting together air conditioner parts, then in quality control. But I won't lie to you, my attention was fixed on the Doe Network. And once we launched the thing, I had no idea how it would spin on its own. Almost instantly, the website attracted people all over the world, other amateur sleuths. These were all people looking to contribute and help families find their loved ones. I wouldn't really call them volunteers. They were people just like me. These weren't police officers. They were factory workers, housewives, people who found little pieces of the puzzle in their own local newspaper and they wanted to contribute. Even the cops were coming to us. They wanted to look through our profiles of unidentified people to help them solve their own missing person cases. And these guys were impressed with our little network. It woke their asses up. The website did, and still does, look like it was put together by a ragtag group of volunteers. It's honestly pretty clunky. If you pull it up, you can look through a whole database of missing and dead people. I'll pull one up right now for a missing person. There's a physical description, date of birth, height, weight, etc. Then there's circumstances of death and identifiers, like if they were wearing jewelry when they died. The idea is that an unidentified body with jewelry would match a person who went missing wearing the same jewelry. That just might be a match. By 2001, the Doe Network was pretty popular. People would call our tip line, which was actually my home phone number, or just send in information about a missing relative. We'd try to make matches and then send the info to local law enforcement.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
We all had our reasons for getting into the Doe Network. For me, I really wanted answers, and I felt like I was actually investigating. But some people were less invested in answers and just morbidly fascinated with death. Let's face it, people have always been fascinated with death. But this was the early 2000s. With the rise of cable TV and procedurals like CSI and Law & Order, true crime quickly became an obsession. I remember one of my medical examiner friends once said before the Doe Network, you couldn't give away a dead body. Now they're fighting over them. I guess Doe Network allowed volunteers to play detective, pretend they were on CSI or something. But for me, this is not a hobby. It's not a toy. People were looking for loved ones. By this point in my life, I'd lost people too. I could imagine the hell these families were going through. Sometime around 2007, after I'd been investigating for a few years, I got this call while I was at the warehouse. I had to step out on the loading dock to answer. It's from this guy I'd never talked to before. His name was John Paul Jones, and he said he worked for the National Institute of Justice in Washington, D.C. Now, by that time, I'd been on national shows to talk about my investigating, but this was a whole new level. John Paul was inviting me to go to the National Press Club. They were announcing the formation of the first federally funded database for missing and unidentified people. I remember being a little scared. This was the federal government, the big leagues. My mama didn't actually want me to go. She thought I was in trouble for something. But I went anyway. With no disrespect to my mama, she was dead wrong. I'd been invited to be part of the working group to develop this federal database. I remember being at the press club in D.C. for this new initiative. I wasn't wearing a brand new suit. I'd gone to a Goodwill and bought a suit for probably $10 or $15 because I didn't know if I'd ever need it again. I showed up at the press club and it was covered with D.C. policy people and reporters. I thought, what in the hell can I do for these people? I thought, just don't embarrass yourself, Todd. They were developing something that would end up being called NAMIS, the National Missing and Unidentified Person System. Like DOE Network, but the government would run it on a massive, grant-funded scale. And the best part of all, they wanted me to help build it.
What the purpose of this database is to literally resolve unidentified persons cases against the missing persons data. So that ultimately, you know, these individuals can be identified, returned to family.
That's Tony Falsetti. He's a forensic anthropologist, now with the chief medical examiner in Washington, D.C. It's a serious job. You have to go through security and be escorted up to this office in this massive government building. But it didn't take long for me to cut through all of that and become Tony's friend.
Todd was the officiant at our wedding in Knoxville, Tennessee. He was very nervous. He was more nervous than we were. But he did a fantastic job. Yes, you know, he had to get himself ordained, and we were his first wedding. And as I understand it, he's done several since.
Yep, he's got that right. I introduced him and his wife, Ketyana, a forensic artist, and they thought I was the right fit for the job. Nowadays, Tony basically spends his day looking at bones to learn more about the person they once belonged to.
It's surprising how much you can tell from your bones.
But he's lighthearted about the work, too. His desk is filled with all these toy bone and skull knickknacks, and he has sports jerseys on the wall. Here's what he says makes a good forensic anthropologist.
Tenacity, patience, attention to detail, critical thinking, and maybe a little bit of awkwardness, introvertedness. we enjoy doing these kinds of things mostly on our own.
He was actually raised in Tennessee like me, but he didn't have the accent at all. I met him at the working group when we were all in Florida trying to figure out what NAMIS needed to be. Liked him from the start, but I'm not sure he knew what to make of me.
I really didn't know anything other than, you know, there was this new individual who had joined us who, you know, we were told had experience, who was the first person to actually sort of use the internet and publicly generated data or information to actually solve an unidentified person's case.
And it's true. I really wasn't the federal government type. Many times I have phone calls and I think people were quite disarmed because they weren't expecting a Southern voice. I didn't come from where other guys come from, you know? They went through police academy or whatever training. I floated into this career path a different way. This thing called NAMIS, again, the National Missing and Unidentified Person System, is supposed to be a tool, a clearinghouse for all missing and unidentified bodies. If DOE Network looks like a clunky early 2000s website, NAMIS looks awfully sterile and clinical. There's no doubt it's a government website.
I think it was based on, well, ultimately, Todd's model.
At the time, I was still working at the factory, so I basically used up my vacation time to help him out. It felt worth it. We all had the same goal. We wanted to match two groups of people, missing people and John and Jane Doe's. People like the two boys I couldn't get out of my head. Around 2009, 2 years after that press club trip, I was able to quit my job at the factory and started working as a contractor for the Department of Justice. I had to scour police reports and autopsies for details to build out missing persons profiles. The work actually isn't all that complicated, but you gotta be relentless about finding facts. What I did was basically entering data, putting in clues like a person's height, weight, circumstances of them going missing. I loved it. I was all in. One of my bosses, Dr. Arthur Eisenberg, great guy. I once told him I wasn't sure I was the right man for this job. Said, "You're giving me a job that people with PhDs have, and I don't have their training." But he didn't care. He saw something in me. He said, "Go forth and heal the broken hearts. How's that?" And he turned his little chair around and went back to work. And so did I.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When people die, usually the next of kin is notified. But what if there's no known next of kin? What if there's no one to identify the body and say, yep, that's my son? In that case, a medical examiner's office will take down data points. Maybe they'll send their bones to the FBI in Quantico, Virginia. Or to Tony, a forensic anthropologist with all the bones in his office.
What we do is we examine human skeletal remains for the purposes of identification. And in doing that, we develop the basic biological profile of that individual, which would be their age, sex, hopefully some information about their ancestry, whether it's Europe, Asia, Africa, and then how tall they were.
Tony can even tell if someone has healed fractures or had cavities that they got filled.
Our entire life, everything that we encounter, whether they're childhood diseases or illnesses or injuries, are written in our bones, and they stay there.
Now, at the same time, people go missing, and there's data on that, too. Let's say your sister goes missing. She's Black, mid-40s, had dental fillings on two molars, and a tattoo on her right shoulder of a butterfly. That all gets entered into NAMIS. And when there's enough overlapping information, there's a potential match, and we look into it further. Mike Nance's job at NAMIS was basically to fill out the profile. He's a former homicide detective who gives like 110%, cares about the work. He wants to see a family made whole so they can stop spinning out of control.
I kind of characterize it as the movie Groundhog Day, when Bill Murray woke up every day at 6 o'clock to the same music. Well, that's what families do. They wake up every morning to the same nightmare that they have. And what can they do to find their loved one?
We help answer those questions, but NAMIS is not out on the street solving crimes. We're helping law enforcement do that. But we're also doing something cops often don't have time to do, helping family who've lost loved ones heal. I was the first regional systems administrator, handling missing people and unknown people around the Southeast. There were thousands of open cases at any given time. Among those thousands was a case I'd come across in 2004. It eluded me. It was the one with the serial killer and the two boys. In the early 2000s, I'd read a book about a suspected serial killer and the murder of this one young woman in Oklahoma. Now, this serial killer, a man named Franklin Floyd, wasn't famous on the level of, say, Jeffrey Dahmer or Ted Bundy, but the impact he had on this one family was immeasurable, and that's what I wanted to know more about. The book mentioned two of her relatives, two boys. They have both vanished, one in the 70s and one in the 90s. This boggled my mind. How could they have disappeared and no one was looking for them? What made these cases even more challenging was neither body was ever found. So I entered what I knew about Michael Hughes, the school-age boy, into the databases.
He was 6 years old, brown hair, brown eyes, scar on the forehead, two crooked bottom teeth. But the infant was a real mystery to me. All I had to start with was a name. Philip Stephen Brandenburg. With so little to go on, it was really hard to fill out his profile on the Doe Network, and especially Namus. Why? Because infants don't have dental records or tattoos. Lots of babies start out with a mop of blonde hair and a year later have a totally different color. Or they start it with curly hair and end up with it straight. The other challenge is, if for some reason your parents aren't looking for you, it's not like a coworker or landlord is either. For all intents and purposes, Philip Stephen Brandenburg never existed in the first place. I only knew about him because he was mentioned in a book that I'd read in the early 2000s about a serial killer. I had no paperwork to go off of, nothing official. I'd hoped the FBI would have tracked down those documents. But when he came to them with questions about the Brandenburgs, we were pretty shocked. Here's my buddy Mike Nance again.
In the case of Philip Brandenburg, the FBI agent could not validate or could not determine if Philip Brandenburg was ever born, ever had ever existed.
I was taken with the case, possibly the toughest I'd ever took on. I knew there was more to the story. I just had a feeling if I found out more information about Philip, it would lead me somewhere I had to go. You'll learn this about me. It's kind of just the way I am. I feel things pretty strongly, more than others maybe. Like I said, the case chose me. At the time, I was still at the DOJ, so the FBI were compelled to talk to me. If I weren't, they might have said, none of your business. But asking them about Philip was an ass-backwards way of finding out they didn't have any paperwork on him, period. But I thought, he had to be born somewhere. Everybody is. And maybe this person existed somehow, some way. Maybe someone out there was missing him. And he deserved to be found, dead or alive. Doe Network is populated by public records. Stuff like newspaper clippings, missing persons pages. So we went in and added everything we could about Philip. Where we thought he was born. Where he might have been last seen. And then Mike and I put this case into Namus. Mike was the regional specialist in charge of the case.
So we had the missing person case in Namus as Philip Brandenburg. And so then it became my task to try to enhance that as much as possible.
His job was to find more clues about this missing boy, like if he had any distinguishing marks or features or where he was last seen. And then I had to wait. But I'm not a patient person. There's just some things I won't let go. That could be something people say is a flaw.
He is committed. He does not stop. If he gets his mind on a case, he finishes it through.
I know what this all sounds like, a little morbid, but it's not to me. I have something of a connection to dead people. They've been in my life for as long as I can remember. I was 2 years old when my mother had my sister. Her name was Sue Ann. She lived for just a very brief sparkle of life. That was it. Most days I can't talk about this, but one night, I was able to, just once. And that's a tape you're hearing right now. Mom still never got over my sister. It was always there. And she was pregnant again. This time with my brother, Greg. And we waited for him. We even had a name if he was a boy or if he's a girl. So he was born. And he was sick. It was very clear there was visible birth defects. So they took him to Vanderbilt in an ambulance, so he was gone. And it was the second day that he passed away by himself. And that's hard to think about. I was only 9 years old by then and had lost two siblings. Our family was shell-shocked. It was just a numb period of time. And I remember the first time we went to his grave. I remember my mom, she, the red mud, she got it all over. Dad put her in the car, and it almost looked like blood on her hands. She was just holding her hands, and she just stunned. And she said, I can't leave him in this cold ground. But we had to. We had to. Most people aren't exposed to death until later in life. But me, I knew about death before I even set foot in kindergarten. No one tried to shelter me from the death of my siblings, even when I was a child myself. Our family actually owned the cemetery before even my mom and dad were alive. As a result, I never thought of death as taboo or creepy. These were my family members, and they were present in my life.
The way that I knew my brother and sister, they were never really gone in a way. They were there. Their names were on the grave. You know, we took care of the cemetery. We would play while my mom and dad, my aunt and uncle, they would mow the cemetery. And as I got older, working with the Tent Girl case and other cases, I'm hearing all of these stories and they don't even know where they are. Missing can be worse than dead. And then having a tombstone with John or Jane Doe on it, it just didn't compute. You know, I thought, at least I know where mine are. At least I know who they are. How could you not have a name on your tombstone?
If I really think about it, I think I became so focused on these two children because of my own brother and sister. I had to give these two missing boys the dignity of a headstone. Anyone who knows me knows I'm a long way from perfect. And they might also say that I should have let this case go. But just like I did with the Tent Girl, I held on to hope. It's kind of like fishing. I put out my line and worm and waited for someone who knew Philip to bite. But I had to go about my life. My wife and I had our second son. There were other cases that needed my attention. Then one day I got a call from an unknown number in 2019, 15 years after I started looking.
I don't even know how I got your number.
I was in my house in the kitchen doing something, probably pacing. I never really sat down. I didn't recognize the number. I thought it might have been a telemarketer or a wrong number. But then I thought, you never know. I'll pick this one up.
And I told him, our conversation, I was like, you're not going to believe this. I said, I don't blame you if you don't believe it, because this sounds crazy. And I started explaining, and he took the time to listen. He picked up the phone. I mean, it was just one in a billion, I guess. My name is Steve Patterson. I live in Cherwell, North Carolina. I'm 49 years old. And I searched my name and found the missing persons report.
This guy, Steve Patterson, was calling to say that he thought he was Philip Stephen Brandenburg. That maybe this was his real name. That had been changed when he was just a baby. He'd later tell me he was looking at the Doe Network, that clunky website I helped build. What he found was a missing persons page for a boy with the last name Brandenburg. The details seem familiar. First, because the baby was born in April 1974, just like Steve. Second, because that name, Philip Stephen Brandenburg. He'd seen it once, written on a manila envelope in his parents' house. And now he'd called me, because he was wondering if it might be his real name. Steve was looking for the authorities. Instead, he called me directly.
It just opened a floodgate then. I mean, it just started. Everything started falling into place. And I'm not even good with computers. I don't know how in the world I found all this out.
Steve and I started talking and talking and talking. This was the first time in a long career of working on John and Jane Doe cases that one of them called me up on the phone. Was he the infant I was looking for? At the time, there was no way to know for sure. The timing lined up. He would have been an infant in 1974. Now he's a grown man. But there was something about Steve's tone that shook me. He sounded so desperate to find out who his people were. I remember the way he said it. I don't know who I am. I don't think in that moment Steve knew how far I'd gone looking for him. Or that in order to find him, I'd written to a convicted murderer so many years ago. If this man was who he said he was, it would have meant he had escaped the clutches of a serial killer, while his siblings didn't. It would have been a miracle. But by now, you know, stranger things have happened. This season of Hello, John Doe, a fugitive on the run for 30-plus years.
The actual folders for the case, I would say, would stack about 6 feet high.
Mixed up identities and screwed up pseudonyms.
It's one of the most unique cases I was ever involved with.
And a family left behind, trying to solve a lifetime of mysteries.
Yes, they did take a DNA sample. And then I said, well, did you find Steve? And they said, who's Steve? I said, Steve's my little boy.
I was thunderstruck. It was something I never, and no parent ever wants to hear their child go through.
You know, instead of being part of the family, he was given away. When in all reality, it saved his life.
Hello, John Doe is an original production by Revelations Entertainment in association with First and Last Productions. From Revelations, our executive producers are Morgan Freeman and James Younger. From First to Last, Lindsay Moreno is the executive producer. Our producing partner is Neon Hum Media. It was written and produced by Kate Mishkin. Our editor is Catherine St. Louis. She is also Neon Hum Media's executive editor. Our executive producer is Shara Morris. Our development producer is Ian Lindsay. Our associate producer is Rufaro Faith Mazarura. Sound design and mixing by Scott Somerville. Theme and original music composed by Jesse Perlstein. Additional music came from Epidemic Sound and Blue Dot Sessions. Bendel Fulton is our fact checker. Our production manager is Samantha Allison. For My Heart Media, Dylan Fagan is our executive producer. Special thanks to Adelia Rubin at Neon Hum and Carrie Lieberman and Will Pearson at iHeartMedia. I'm Todd Matthews. You can learn more about NamUs at namus.gov. The number for the National Center for Missing Exploited Children's call center is 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. The National Sexual Assault Hotline from the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network is 1-800-656-4673. Okay, guys, this is the end of the show. If you didn't like it, don't do anything. But if you did like it, you make sure that you rate and review the show. It helps more people to find it and hear this wonderful story. Thanks again for listening.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.